Oh, you better believe it.
How about
I
you?
I always bring
I'm
you.
I'm doing very well. You woke me up.
I'd like to open this February 13, 2013 hearing of the House Committee on Higher Education and Workforce Development. Welcome to you all. Very happy to have you here. We're going to be spending the entire 2 hours of this session on House Bill 2787, that is the tuition equity bill. And just before we start our series of panels, I just want to say a couple of things. I believe that there are some amendments that are going to be coming our way. Today is not a work session. Today is just a public hearing. We will have our work session, we hope, on Friday. I hope that those amendments will come to me soon. You know, generally, I'd like to have amendments 48 hours in advance of the work session so that I can process them and get them out to all of you. I'd like you all to have them a day in advance just so that you can understand them, ask questions about them, et cetera. The second thing I would say is that there may well be issues raised today that will cause you to either cheer or applaud, or on the other hand, feel like hissing or booing. I would ask you to refrain from doing either of those. It's really important that people in this room be able to speak before us without intimidation and just say their piece, and in exchange, we promise to give you our full attention. So,
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Greenlick.
May I also comment? We've received a lot of communication, verbal and written, and some of it's been quite intemperate. I hope you would remind the presenters that it's really important to keep it this courteous and intemperate. That's the opposite of intemperate.
Yes. If we cannot treat each other with respect, we cannot do good work in this building. So that's exactly the kind of tone I would ask you to maintain. We have, just again in terms of introduction, we have seven panels of invited testimony. My hope is that we will have time for the people who have signed up, at least a couple of panels of them. And quickly, we're going to have a couple of panels first of the chief sponsors of the bill. Then we're going to have a group of students. Then we will have a group of opponents of the bill. We will then have presidents and board members from the Oregon University System. We'll then have a couple of immigration attorneys, and then we'll have some high school students and teachers, someone from the religious community, and then finally a panel of from Oregon's leading business associations. Okay, and then we'll move into open testimony. So with that, I'm going to open this public hearing on House Bill 2787. Victoria, do you want to tell us what that bill is?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2787 provides that certain students are entitled to exemption from non-resident tuition and fees at public universities, allows for direct Supreme Court review of challenges to the act.
Thank you. All right, I'll call up our first panel, which is our esteemed Senate President, Peter Courtney. And following that will be Representative Comp and myself.
Thank you, Chair Michael Dembrough, Vice Chair Chris Harker, Vice Chair John Huffman, and the guest and multi-talented members of the House Higher Education and Workforce Development Committee. My name is Peter Courtney, and I live in Northeast Salem, and I'm a state senator, and my district is number 11. Number 11 includes major portions of Salem, Jervis, and Woodburn, and in fact, this building is in my state senate district. I have the rare privilege and honor to represent the Oregon State Capitol in my senate district. This session marks the 10th anniversary of this bill's existence in Oregon State Legislature. Way back in 2003, I was asked to introduce this bill by the then principal of Woodburn High School, the home of the mighty Bulldogs. I introduced Senate Bill 10, and at that time, I did not know that much about it. Well, I sure learned a lot about it by radio talk shows both statewide and nationally. I was vilified, but that's not important. At that time, the Senate was tied 15 to 15, like the House was last session. And the dynamics of the chamber weren't much difference. In spite of that, this bill passed out of the state Senate in 2003 on a 22-8 vote. It was an extraordinary vote after an extraordinary debate on the Oregon State Senate floor. And it went to the House. And that's where it stayed in their education committee. In the 2011 regular session, I again introduced this bill, and we passed it again out of state Senate, but the vote fell way off by only 18-11. Even though we passed it over here, that was a sad day for me because some individuals had voted for it before, voted for against it. But it still made it its way over here. And again in the House Education Committee or thereabouts, the bill did not move. You know, it's amazing. I ran into an individual who served in 2003, who I adore and worship, who served here. And I recently, in a restaurant in Salem, he is from the greater Salem area. I'm going to be vague about him. And he said to me in his legislative career, this is the one bill he regretted not moving out of his committee. He brought it up. All of you care about children. All of you care about kids. Yes, you do. And I don't even know any of you that well. I really don't. But I know that. You work day in and day out in your public lives and private lives to provide the young with pride and take care of the young. How many pieces of legislation, how many budget issues, how many hours will you spend to cut an easier path for children, each and every one of you? How many? Countless, countless, regardless of your background, regardless of where you come from in the state, regardless of your political philosophies or your religious philosophies, you will spend countless hours for children. The work stops. The work does not stop because this bill is about kids, kids, kids. I've said it before. The only thing wrong with kids or young people are adults. Now, I said that once at a rally on child abuse. I didn't even know what I said when I said it. But you know what? I said it many years ago, and now I realize when I said it that I probably was right. The only thing wrong with children and young people are adults. And this bill is about kids who are where they are because of adults. I don't mean to pass judgment, but that's a fact. That's a fact. That's why this bill is here. These kids are in every one of our high schools. Oh, yeah, yes, they are. My kids are your kids, and your kids are my kids. Together they are our kids. They're Oregon kids. That's what this is about. Not adults. It's about young people and kids. This bill will allow undocumented kids to qualify for in-state tuition at one of our seven, depending upon how you've been, public universities, in-state tuition. As long as they've graduated from an Oregon high school, been accepted to an Oregon university, gone to Oregon schools for at least 3 years, lived in the U.S. for at least 5 years, demonstrated intent to become a citizen, and are dependent of a non-citizen. Oregon high school graduates who have the grades and aptitude to be accepted at the university or colleges should have a chance to attain quality post-secondary education. The current cost, and I know well, I have worked for Western Oregon University for 28 years. The current cost is extremely prohibitive for immigrant students because we require them to pay international student tuition as well as out-of-state tuition. They're the same. Let me give you an example. At the University of Oregon, in-state tuition 4 years is basically, on the average, $37,032. The out-of-state foreign student's tuition is $114,612. The difference is $77,580. Now, let me tell you something. I'll never forget this. There was an oncologist in my life. Had a tough time back a few years ago. He has a PhD in medicine as well as an MD. He is the head of the Oregon Medical Society. He came out of University of Riverside and UCLA Medical System. And William Bud Pierce once told me something. Today, I would never have gone that path because I would have been too afraid of the debt. I would not have gone to school because I would have been too afraid of the debt. So let's understand something. These students don't have the resources to pay these foreign student out-of-state tuition. They don't. So don't think we're out simply by passing. That is a non sequitur argument. It is not true, and it's not fair. And don't forget, I just gave you tuition fees. I didn't give you books. I didn't give you all the other incidental fees. It's not basically easy or inexpensive to even go to public education anymore. Currently, these high school graduates are not attending college at all because of the cost. Having them pay in-state tuition would be an additional revenue for Oregon College and University, and it would not cost any taxpayers' dollars the way it's been presented. It would be a great disservice to our state and our people if we allowed the next generation of oncologists, doctors, entrepreneurs, great teachers, great lawyers, great parents. And we did not allow them because the next great generation of brilliant minds to go uncultivated simply because we refused to acknowledge that they are as much a part of Oregon as we are and all our kids are. We've planted the seeds of greatness within them during high school. Let's allow them to access higher education, see them through to fruition, and add to Oregon's abundant resources. Please understand, this bill does not guarantee these kids admission to a college or university. They still got to earn their way. It does not guarantee them a degree. They still got to work their way through colleges and university to get that degree. It does not guarantee them financial or scholarships. It does not. It simply gives them a path. A path to opportunity, a path to the American dream, a path to being a taxpayer, a path to greatness, and a path to being a contributor to our economy in this life, in the light of day, not relegated to the shadows. As public servants, we do things like this every day. Every one of you believes that we have a profound responsibility and obligation to take care of the upcoming generation. Every one of you believes that. Every one of you. That's what we're about. We don't distinguish. We don't discriminate. All we're trying to do is ensure that these young people are not punished for the actions of their parents. 14 other states have this legislation. This makes me sad. Washington, California, Utah, New Mexico, Texas, Oklahoma, Kansas, Nebraska, Illinois, New York, Connecticut, Wisconsin, Rhode Island, Maryland. And you know what's interesting? When I introduced this bill 10 years ago, I love to say Oregon likes to be first or only. We had a shot to be in number three. Do you know who the other ones were? Well, I'm going to tell you who they were. Utah and Texas. Utah and Texas were red then, and they're red now. And I'm not making that up. I am not making that up. That argument was carried on the Senate floor in 2003. This is not Democrat-Republican stuff. It is not rural-urban stuff. It's children. It's children and our young people. That's what it is. And so I hope, respectfully, that you'll consider this bill. I beg you to please report this bill out, to give them a shot, to give them a chance. You know, they're as much a part of Oregon as each one of us. And this is our chance to look out for that next generation of young people. This is our chance as adults to say we took care of the young people and the children. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you,
Mr.
Senator
Dembo, Mr. Chair.
Maybe Mr. President.
Thank you, Mr. President. Thank
any,
you, Mr.
Any brief questions for Senator Courtney? Seeing none, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Appreciate your time.
Well,
and next we're going to have Representative Dembo and Representative Comp, and I will let the two of you decide who is going to go first. And Representative Dembo, just a reminder, please identify yourself.
Thank you, sir.
Be brief.
I promise to identify myself. I'm not sure I can be brief, but thank you, sir. Representative Comp's going to go first.
I had to take the long way. I do that in life.
Welcome, Representative Comp.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. Chair Dembo and committee members for the Committee for Higher Education, for the record, my name is Betty Comp, and I serve House District 22, as our beloved Senator just reminded you. That's North Salem, Jervis, Woodburn, Brooks, and it is a district that I'm proud to serve. Having been a teacher and a principal of one of the highest poverty school districts in the state of Oregon, the issue of tuition equity directly affects students and families in my hometown, my neighbors, my friends. I always believe that every child deserves an education that will help them live their life to their full potential. Ever since my time as a teacher in the Woodburn School District, I've been asking students there and around the state, wherever I go, if are they planning on going to college? Overwhelmingly, the answer is yes. No matter the child's race, age, reading level, the answer is yes. They want to go to college because they want to have a great job. They want to make their parents proud. They want to prove that they are of value, that they are contributing to our great nation. The current way we are treating a large swath of our college-age students does more than create barriers for their success. It destroys their dreams. At this point, I have to tell you, I've been very emotional about preparing this testimony today because it talks to my heart. It talks to my students. It talks to the students that have overcome incredible barriers. And I'm going to take a short pathway off of my written testimony. A young boy that came to our middle school. He was a sixth grader. His parents had just brought him to America that summer. And once he got there, it was about November, he wasn't feeling well. And what I would share is the fact this is a young boy that had gone through a lot with his parents to come to America to find his dream. And what happened was the fact that he had a brain tumor. And we worked hard. We worked hard to get him medical care. We took him up to Dornbecker's. We took him up to OHSU. And his parents, being very righteous people, very honest people, when they asked him at those hospitals, are you a citizen? They said no. And so then what we did after that was something that Representative Greenlick's familiar with, and that is we worked with social workers, we worked within the system, we worked with Mexican consulate. We were on phone calls daily trying to make sure this young sixth grader could get medical care. What ended up, because of these parents' honesty and dedication, again, as Senator Courtney referred to these parents that want something more for their children, we ended up having him go back to Mexico, separate of his parents, to get treatment, appropriate treatment, in a Mexican hospital. Regretfully, all of our interventions and all of our plans did not help this young man. His parents could have gone up to Dornbecker's, could have gone up to OHSU and said, yes, we're here legally. And we could have possibly provided a better medical treatment plan for him. That young man passed away that spring. He had gone through the hardships of his very short life with his parents coming here to find a dream. And it was hard. It was hard for all of us as of school principals, his teachers. It was hard for our family within our middle school. Many times, I mean, we face death in different ways in our lives, but not always is it with our classmate, our friend. And these are the children that I serve. These are the families that give me hope because they're so passionate about their future. These children have the potential to create the economic success in business, science, engineering in our state that we need desperately. Instead of nurturing and building upon their abilities, we are setting up roadblocks to their success. We are diminishing the chances of improving Oregon's workforce from within. I refuse to stand by and let our students, by asking them to pay out-of-state tuition at universities when they have lived here their whole lives. Yes, some are undocumented in our nation, but literally ruin the lives of students who now have called America their home, and we could not be more unpatriotic by allowing this to continue. My role as a mother, teacher, and legislator has always been to ensure the success of those people around me. House Bill 2787 will be the final step to reach all the goals of the mission statement in Woodburn School District that was written as a diverse community. We prepare all students to achieve challenging goals and aspirations and contribute to a diverse world. I ask you to give our students the opportunity to attend our public university as residents of our state, their home, the right to have access to higher education. I assure you, they have earned it.
Thank you, Representative Kump. Representative Demereaux.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Michael Demereaux, representative for House District 45, that's Northeast Portland, out to Park Rose. And I'm proud to bring before you House Bill 2787, because House Bill 2787 is a critical part of the effort that this committee is making this session to extend opportunity to more young people, to make college affordable and accessible to every single high school student in this state. We've heard again and again just how important it is for our young people to have post-secondary skills if we are to move our state's income level above the national average. Last session, this committee passed the Transfer Student Bill of Rights, the Foster Youth Promise, the Affordable Textbook Act, and other measures designed to close the opportunity gap and remove barriers to success. This session, we have lots more work to do to expand access to our public universities and to make sure that young Oregonians have the tools to succeed there. With House Bill 2787, we're removing another set of barriers to higher education, because there's a group of young Oregonians who have been priced out of higher education, out of the higher education marketplace. Even though they've grown up in Oregon, attended school here, graduated from an Oregon high school, and been accepted by an Oregon public university, they are unable to enter that university. Why? As a result of their parents' documentation status, they are not considered to be Oregon residents for tuition purposes and must pay between 3 and 4 times the in-state tuition rate that their peers pay. And you heard the numbers from President Courtney. They are effectively priced out of opportunity. Colleagues, they've done their part. They've done their part to match our investment in them. They've overcome a number of barriers, in most cases, to become the first in their families to become eligible for a university. That dream of qualifying for college, getting a college degree, and a good productive job kept them going through high school. They could have headed to the streets for a life of being a burden on society, but instead they took that path that we want all young Oregonians to take. And then they hit this roadblock, this barrier, that holds them back and that prevents the state from capitalizing on the investment that we have already made in them. Federal law allows this tuition roadblock to be lifted if states pass tuition equity legislation. And over the last 10 years, as you heard from President Courtney, 13 states have chosen to do so. Texas, New Mexico, California, Washington, Illinois, New York, Nebraska, Wisconsin, Utah, Oklahoma, Kansas, Maryland, and Connecticut. This legislation is nearly identical to theirs. It says that students will be considered resident for purposes of tuition if they meet each of the following requirements. 1, they've gone to school in this country for at least 5 years. 2, they have attended an Oregon high school for at least 3 years. 3, they have graduated from an Oregon high school. 4, they have been accepted by an Oregon university and enroll in that university within 3 years of their high school graduation. And five, they have shown their intention to become a citizen or a lawful permanent resident of the United States by filing an affidavit with the university stating that they have filed an application to legalize their immigration status or will file an application as soon as they are legally eligible to do so. Colleagues, I know that you're already receiving form letter emails filled with misinformation about this bill. They say that tuition equity is not legal. In fact, no legal challenge to any of these state statutes has ever been successful. In fact, the most recent challenge in California was denied by the state Supreme Court, which ruled unanimously in 2011 that the tuition equity statute is consistent with federal law. We are so confident that House Bill 2787 will meet legal scrutiny that we've included a provision for direct review by our own Oregon Supreme Court. There are other objections that you may hear about this bill, none of them based in fact. You will hear that tuition equity gives these students special privileges, that it discriminates against residents of other states. It does not. This nation's public college and university system is built on the idea that if you attend the public college or university in the state where you live, you pay in-state tuition. If you choose, for whatever reason, not to attend college in your own state and prefer to attend a public college or university in another state, you pay more. You pay the higher rate. You can always move to that state, establish residency there, usually after a year, and then attend a school in that state's higher education system at the in-state rate. That's not true for the young people that House Bill 2787 is trying to help. They have nowhere else to go. You may also hear that giving in-state tuition to these young people will drain scarce state resources and shut out qualified legal residents. According to the Oregon University system, admitting a student eligible for tuition equity will not shut out an Oregon student who meets entrance requirements. We have no enrollment caps in our universities, and according to OUS, the system has room for every qualified in-state student who applies. Not a single qualified student will be displaced. So the tuition equity students are not a cost to the system. They will not require additional expenditures by the universities. In fact, the Legislative Fiscal Office's analysis of tuition equity in 2011 showed that it will actually bring additional money to the universities. Without HB 2787, these students would not be attending a public university. They would not be paying those fees. With House Bill 2787, they will be adding their in-state tuition dollars to the university budgets at no additional cost. Because their numbers will be small and spread out among our seven public universities, no new sections will need to be opened, no new professors will need to be hired. This has been the experience of every single state that has adopted tuition equity, and we can look to those states for confirmation of that. These students will be assets to their university, and that's why we have two university presidents will be here after me to convey their support. You'll hear that it makes no sense to confer degrees on students who will never be able to work legally in this state. There's a faulty assumption there. If we look at the other states that have tuition equity, many of their young graduates are now working legally. In various ways, they have found their way to legal status, and now they are putting their education to good use. We've invited two of the state's foremost immigration attorneys to testify here this morning and to answer your questions about this. Colleagues, we all know that the public's attitude towards these young people brought to Oregon as children is changing. If there's one thing that most people agree on in this immigration debate, it's that we have to find a way to bring these young people into legal status. We have to create a path for them. And I believe that sometime in the near future that will happen. When that happens, the other states that have tuition equity will have an educated workforce ready and willing to take advantage of the law. Here in Oregon, if we do not institute tuition equity soon, we'll have created a kind of lost generation without the high-level skills needed to succeed and to help Oregon move forward. Many of them will in fact be a drain on our resources rather than an asset. Is that really the route we want to take? And finally, I want to address the argument that tuition equity rewards lawbreakers. These kids, colleagues, are not lawbreakers. They are examples of exactly what we want our young people to do. Work hard. Get good grades. Dream big. They're exactly the kind of kids we should be investing in. Many have lived here virtually their entire lives. They did not choose to come here. They were brought here. They have no other country to go to. They have plenty to offer this state, but unfortunately they become the collateral damage of the immigration debate. They're being sentenced to lives without a future through no fault of their own. That's wrong, and it's not the American way. In this country, we don't punish children for the actions of their parents. We try to show them a better way and open up that better way for them. These kids are not asking for any kind of handout. They will not receive a nickel in state aid or federal aid. All they're asking for is access to opportunity, access to success, a chance to repay the people of this state for the investment we've made in them, a chance to be part of the economic development that this state needs. In a few minutes, you'll be hearing from them directly. They'll tell their stories far more eloquently than I can. They are what House Bill 2787, the tuition equity bill, is all about. Colleagues, the time has come. I urge you to support tuition equity.
Thank you, Representative Dembro. Any quick questions? While you're thinking about that, just a quick second. Carla Castaneda and Edith Gomez, if you will start making your way up to the dais. I see no questions. Thank you, Representatives. Carla Castaneda, Edith Gomez, go ahead and have a seat. Decide who's going to go first quickly, and identify yourself for the record and begin your testimony. We want to move this along quickly so we can get as many folks testifying as possible. Welcome. Go right ahead.
Okay. Good morning, Chair Dembro and members of the committee. My name is Edith Gomez Navarrete, and I'm a student at the University of Oregon. Thank you for allowing me to speak to you today. I'm testifying in favor of House Bill 2787 for tuition equity and have been speaking out for a couple of years now, so some of you may have heard me before. I was born in Mexico and then a year later brought into this country illegally by my parents, who were in search of a better life for their children. I have lived in Eugene, Oregon my whole life. In fact, I have the honor of attending college there. Eugene is the only home I've ever known. I grew up just like any other normal kid with dreams and aspirations of doing something amazing in life and achieving milestones like getting that first job, traveling abroad, obtaining a driver's license, and most importantly, going to college. Little did I know my life was going to be anything but normal. I first learned about my undocumentedness when I was in second grade. Initially, I didn't understand what being undocumented entailed. Then in high school, the reality of what it meant to be undocumented struck. Forget about getting a permit, traveling with my friends, getting that job that would get me closer to independence. I wasn't going to be able to go to college. Okay. In my mind, it was going to be working in the field or school, so I chose school. I was in the honors program as well as in Eugene International High School and taking a full IB curriculum, National Honor Society, College Now courses, and was a varsity tennis player. And I'm proud to say that I was a recipient of the International Baccalaureate Diploma for IHS as well as the Honors Diploma for Churchill High School, but none of this was going to matter. I still wasn't going to be allowed to go to college. I grew up seeing a lot of my peers give up, and that was one of the most discouraging sights to see. But somehow there are those students out there like me who just didn't give up so just kept going. It wasn't until my sophomore year in high school that I was removed from the home by DHS due to abuse in the home. And it was because of this that I was granted a U visa. Raquel Hecht, who you will hear later, was my immigration attorney, and because of her, I was able to stay in this country. I'm still working towards citizenship, but it will take many years and cost a great amount of money. Even with this visa, I still was not going to be granted in-state tuition, and I was facing a $30,000 international student tuition fee per year. So once again, I was faced with having to battle for a right to be in the classroom. They say that college is a match to be made and not a prize to be won, and I 100% agree, but let there be an equal playing field. It took the University of Oregon's committee to decide if I would be granted in-state tuition, which I was fortunate to receive. I, for once in a long time, was no longer facing a closed door, since someone took the time to see how wrong it was to deny a diligent, hardworking student like me an opportunity to a higher education. While I'm thankful for the opportunity given to me, I can't help but think of the others who may not be as lucky, which is why I'm here to ask you that you give these great minds an opportunity to show you how much they can put into this country that we call our home. Thank you.
Thank you, Edith. Carla?
Hi, I'm Carla, and...
Could you give your last name as well?
Sorry. Good morning, Chair Dembro, members of the committee. My name is Carla Castaneda. If you knew that your children's dreams could come true, and that you would be able to provide your family with a better life in another country, would you go? I was brought to the land of dreams, of hope, and of freedom when I was 4 years old. I heard people and media call me and my community criminals. Well, let me tell you something. I'm not a criminal. I'm a junior at Park Girls High School. When my parents brought us here, they were thinking about our education. They registered us for school right away. I was really excited, but when I entered kindergarten, no one speaks Spanish and I didn't speak English. It was really hard. When I first sang my ABCs to my parents, they were extremely proud. And that day, their faces, their smiles, just made my day. We moved to Oregon from Texas. As you may know, Texas is one of the first states that granted in-state tuition to undocumented youth. As I was saying, when my sister was a senior in high school, all her peers were looking into colleges and scholarships, so she did too. She worked hard. She applied to university, but they didn't accept her because of her legal status. That day, her world ended. And it killed me to see her because she worked really hard. She worked extremely hard to enter university. That's what she came here to do. We came here for an education, to give back to our community. She wanted to give up, and I know that if she gave up, well then, I couldn't attend college either. But fortunately, a close friend of the family helped her apply to community college, and she is now enrolled in PCC. However, because of her legal status, she is forced to pay out-of-state tuition. Now my parents are working more and are barely home. I come home with an empty house. My parents are working to provide us with a better future, and I'm very thankful. As my graduating year is coming, 2014, I realize that I have to work more than others, and I have to put a lot of effort. I'm taking AP classes and involved in my community. I'm in varsity water polo, I'm in mock trial, I'm in theater, and recently I organized a fundraiser for Special Olympics Oregon, which I jumped in the Columbia. But some days, I wake up and wonder if everything I'm doing matters. I'm afraid. I live in fear, but I try to hide it. Others, my peers, my friends, they're looking forward to college. When I constantly think about my future after high school, I think about the opportunities that are being closed because of my legal status. when I worked as much or more than other students. I didn't do anything wrong. I attend school, I get good grades, and I help my community out. But I'm afraid that my parents won't be able to afford my out-of-state tuition when they can barely afford my sister's. You see, my sister's my hero. She's fought hard and she hasn't given up. And if out-of-state tuition and if in-state tuition isn't passed today, well then, I'm afraid that I won't have the opportunity to attend college, and I want to. I'm a mock trial. I love mock trial. I want to become an attorney one day, and I want to make my parents proud of me. I want them to feel like their sacrifices were worth it. They fought hard for me, and I feel like if tuition equity passes today, it will change my life completely. It will bring opportunity, and it will bring me hope. But it would also bring many, many others that are not here today. And I know that they, too, work really hard. So I would like to thank you for the opportunity today. And I respectfully ask you to vote yes on tuition equity. Thank you.
Thank you, Carla. Thank you very, very much, both of you, for coming before us. Representative Gallegos.
I want to thank you for your testimony and just your courage for coming up and speaking. But I want to make a comment. I think I want people to appreciate one thing that hasn't been said. And we've talked about cultural barriers, language barriers, racial barriers, and I want people to appreciate the psychological barrier that these young people have to overcome. I mean, it's tremendous. I mean, if you think about it, if you learn when you're in the second grade that you're undocumented, what does that do to you? I mean, what does that do to your belief in having a chance to succeed? So that hasn't been talked about, and I just want to raise that as into your awareness. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Parker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Very briefly, I just want to say that to both of you, your parents are already very proud of you. You're just going to make them more proud. And with reference to those days where you wake up and you're not sure that what you're doing matters, we continue to have those throughout our lives. This day is one where I'm pretty darn sure what I'm doing matters.
Thank you, Representative. Thank you both. I'd like to call up Hugo Nicolas and Anicia Limon. Colleagues, if Hugo looks familiar to you, you may remember him from his many times on the House floor 2 years ago. He was an honorary page. Hugo?
Mr. Chairman, Vice Chair Harker, and Vice Chair Huffman. My name is Hugo Nicholas. I'm 20 years old from Salem, Oregon, Northeast Salem. I'm here in support of House Bill 2787. Today makes a step forward, changing the lives of many high school students. I've come to inform you of an issue that many undocumented students from Oregon face every June. Paying international tuition for a four-year university is impossible. My story starts when I came to the United States at age 11. I arrived to this country not knowing any English or anything about the American culture. When I was 13, I remember once reading about the struggles this country had to face during the Second World War. I saw how young people like me gave their lives to have a better country. That is how I came to love the American way of life. In high school, I took honor classes. I was on top of my class. I dreamed of attending University of Oregon. Sorry, Beaver fans. I also volunteer as a police cadet, a fire explorer, an Army ROTC commander, until my junior year, when I realized that I wasn't going to be able to attend University of Oregon. It was very hard for me. Everyone was applying for colleges, everyone was applying for scholarships, and that was not the case for me. It was hard to see everyone happy but me, that I worked so hard for nothing. You don't know how it feels not to be able to dream to go to college, not because you're not smart, but because you have no way to pay for it. After my graduation in 2011, I worked more than three different jobs in the fields. Jobs that did not allow me to be innovative or competitive. I was ashamed when my friends and teachers and places I volunteered saw me, because they expected a lot of me. As much as graduation is a ceremony of renewal, for me it was a graduation of shame. I was powerless and felt depressed. But today, I'm attending Chemeketa Community College with a 3.5 GPA and have two jobs. I want to major in economics and minor in Chinese. Every day I dream to study in a four-year university. I dream to work with a team to make our state more productive and bring new investors. I dream to develop this state to flourish to its highest capacity. These are the same dreams that George Washington once had, Abraham Lincoln, to Rockefeller, to Carnegie, and the same dreams your grandparents had by coming to this country. Tuition equity will give me these opportunities. You invested in my education from the first day I walked into elementary to the last day I walked out of McNary High School. We cannot lose our investment. We need students to attend four-year colleges to develop our workforce. Help students like John, who created his own business at age 17. Estevel, the student who wants to attend college to learn more about technology. The undocumented students, leaders in the JROTC programs all over the state of Oregon. As a student in Oregon, I deserve a shot at the American dream. Oh, sorry. Let me enhance my talents. Today we may be undocumented, but tomorrow we want to lead the way to become the next generation of entrepreneurs that will energize this state. Do not let my dreams die one more year. Let's not just make a workforce, but let's make an exceptional state. Let us have the dignity to afford college. You tell me nothing can stop me from doing what you want to do, but what's stopping me right now is the state that I love. This year, tuition equity should not just be a dream or a topic, but it should be a law. Thank you. And before we move on, I want to say thank you so much for everyone for being here, for all the students. I think there's about 200 people watching right now. And, you know, the only reason why I went back to college was because Representative Denver was someone fighting for tuition equity, and I believed in him, and I believed in everyone is here because they care about this issue. So thank you so much.
Thank you. Anicia.
Good morning. My name's Anicia Limon Hernandez, and I want to thank you, Denver, and the members of the committee for the opportunity of sharing my testimony here today on tuition equity. Higher education is wanted of the students who want to pursue higher education and someday be the person that makes change happen. But not just in society, but in a person's life. Applying for that special college or that dream college that almost every student looks forward to attending is an exciting feeling. I'm one of those students who want to pursue higher education, but sadly for me, it is difficult to pay for. My senior year in high school should have been one of my most memorable years of my life, but instead it was one of my most heartbreaking moments. It was one of my most heartbreaking moments I've ever experienced, because instead of worrying about prom or instead of worrying about my ACTs or ACT tests, I was worrying about what I was going to do after I graduate high school. Where I would end up, I didn't know. When my counselor suggested to research colleges, it's when it hit me how much college really cost. And having no financial assistance, I saw my dreams crushed. My vision of me going to school at any college was far from accomplishing because I could not pay for college. I saw all of my hard work that I had put in academically, like taking AP classes, volunteering for my community, being a part of My Future, My Choice for 4 years, going into the Four Family Institute and building this beautiful park meant absolutely nothing for me. All because I could not, all, and doing that cannot get me to where I want it to be. Not having institution in Oregon makes it 10 times harder to even attend college. It also makes it impossible to finish a degree alone. All of those students who are in the same situation as me end up giving up pursuing a college education because they cannot afford it. I was fortunate not to give up during my difficult times in high school. I almost did because I knew that I did not have enough money to go to my dream college. Thanks to the support of my close ones, I got accepted to Portland State University with a partial scholarship. Unfortunately, this is not the same story for most of us. Not everyone has that support. Not everyone has that support system. Even though I did receive a partial scholarship, I still have to pay out-of-state tuition in Oregon. I wonder how I will pay for my next term or how I would pay for my next year in college. I want to finish what I have already started, and knowing that I have to pay out-of-state makes it 10 times harder. If it wasn't for the people that were there when I saw my world coming to an end, I would not be pursuing my dreams of one day becoming a psychologist for children. If you vote yes on tuition equity, it would make a huge impact on many lives. Also, it would help Oregon's economy, allowing students to attend college, and it would not be a waste of precious knowledge. It would not be a waste of precious knowledge that colleges look for in students. For the past 10 years, we have been trying to pass this bill. The time is now. Take the lead. Thank you.
Thank you both. Okay, thank you.
So again, I want to say thank you to everyone so much for being here, and thank you for everyone for listening to our testimonies. It really means a lot to us. Thank you. And thank you, CALSA, for fighting for this bill. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you both. Okay, I'd like to call up Jim Ludwig and Gabriella Marangiello. And Jim, was there a third person on this panel?
Yes.
Good morning. My name is Gabriella Marangiello. I am a sophomore at Oregon State University and the founding chairman of the Young Americans for Freedom at Oregon State. And I thank you for allowing me to speak this morning. I respectfully wish to remind you that you are elected to represent the best interests of legal Oregon residents. House Bill 2787, the Tuition Equity Bill, is neither equitable to the lawful Oregon resident, especially those who pay taxes, nor is it equitable to out-of-state students attending Oregon public universities. We are a nation of laws. That is the reason so many immigrants, legal and illegal, choose to come to America. Federal law, Title 8, Chapter 14, Section 1623, states, an alien who is not lawfully present in the United States shall not be eligible on the basis of residence within a state for any post-secondary education benefit unless a citizen or national of the United States is eligible for such benefit. Should the Oregon legislature ignore the federal law and confer such privileges, then they must also give the same benefit to out-of-state students like me. Failure to do so may result in a class action lawsuit through a pro bono attorney with either the Heritage Foundation or ACLU. The goal of such action would be compensation to any out-of-state students who are denied the same tuition rate as the Oregon non-resident students. That can become very expensive for the Oregon taxpayers you ostensibly represent. I am a legal U.S. citizen, and my parents are U.S. citizens. I am a resident of California who is an undergraduate at Oregon State University. To attend OSU, my tuition is $22,000 per year. My parents pay so much more to compensate the Oregon taxpayer for the use of brick and mortar, faculty and administrator salaries, pensions and benefits, and the upkeep and maintenance of the campus. Illegal immigrants living in Oregon owe the Oregon taxpayer the same reimbursement, as they do not contribute the taxes necessary to fund these institutions. A 2012 study released by the Federation for American Immigration Reform, titled The Fiscal Burden of Illegal Aliens on Oregon Oregonians cites the data that 170,000 illegal immigrants in Oregon and their 69,000 children now use over $1 billion per year of taxpayer-funded state and local services, yet they contribute only 7.7% per year of those costs in local and state tax revenue. If this legislation is passed, enrollment in Oregon public universities will skyrocket, and much of the costs to run those institutions will be shifted to out-of-state students through escalating tuition and fees. That is not tuition equity. That is confiscation and redistribution. I ask you, Oregon voters, to see this legislation for exactly what it is: a veiled attempt to create a permanent voting bloc indebted to one political party for, yes, yet another government handout. Thank you.
Thank you. Jim, you're next.
Chair Dunbar, members of the committee, my name is Jim Ludwig. I live at 7500 Southwest Leibold Road in McMinnville, Oregon. Last year, Jay Kenton, the chief financial officer for the Oregon University System, said that the difference between in-state and out-of-state tuition at the University of Oregon is about $20,000 per year. That means if you pass this bill, an illegal alien would get a $20,000 per year benefit that would be denied to an American citizen who may have went to high school in Idaho, Montana, Washington, or any other state. A legal immigrant who wants to do everything right, goes through all the paperwork, files all the proper papers, and he wants to go to the University of Oregon next year, he would be required to pay $20,000 more in tuition than somebody who's illegally here. Now, proponents of this bill call it tuition equity. How can it be tuition equity if an American citizen has to pay $20,000 more in tuition than a legal alien? How can it be tuition equity if a legal immigrant has to pay $20,000 more in tuition than somebody who's here illegally? Ken went on to say that out-of-state tuition students pay at the University of Oregon, and it's in the test of what his article is there, $27,000 per year. In-state, about $6,000. The cost of education is $12,000. So in-state students are subsidized by taxpayers. About half of the students at the University of Oregon are out-of-state students. And Kenton says, and I'll quote him directly, quote, "The higher out-of-state tuition rates help subsidize in-state University of Oregon students," close quote. Now, in 2005, the fiscal office said that if only 80 illegal aliens were granted in-state tuition, it would cost the University of Oregon, or cost the university system, about $1 million the first biennium and $2 million the second. If you factor in 2012 tuition rates, that would double to $2 million the first biennium, $4 million the second. But let's be realistic. There are 65 to 66,000 people in ESL, ELL, LEM programs in Oregon. It's estimated about half of them are here illegally. The governor has come out and said that he wants 60% of high school graduates to go on to college. Well, I'm not going to try to do the math. 60% of 33,000, that's a heck of a lot of students. For every student who goes in there under this program, they would be paying less in tuition than a legal immigrant would be, and eventually it would be a huge cost to the university system. If you pick a number at random, any number, let's say 1,200 to take advantage of this. If 1,200 illegal aliens displace 1,200 out-of-state paying tuition students, the cost per year would be $24 million. Now, someone's going to have to make up that difference. Last week, the Oregon Association of Students was in this building complaining about tuition rates. They want them frozen. They don't want them to go up anymore, so they don't want to pay for this. I'm a taxpayer. I don't want to pay for it. Now, we've heard about the number of states that give in-state tuition to illegal aliens, 13. Well, that means 37 don't. Unfortunately, one of the states is California that gives in-state tuition to illegal aliens, and they're university system is imploding on itself due to mismanagement and the fact that it cost $200 million loss in tuition revenue to accommodate the illegal aliens in their system. Many of them are moving up to Oregon, obviously. University of Oregon system, or University of California, over the last 3 years has reduced in seats at their universities from 440,000 to 400,000. You try to go to community college in California, it doesn't do you much good because the classes are all cut back. There's a price to pay for giving illegal aliens benefits that they should not receive. Once again, I ask you, how can it be tuition equity if an American citizen has to pay $20,000 more in tuition than somebody who's illegally here? How can it be tuition equity if a legal immigrant has to pay $20,000 more? Is there any value in citizenship anymore? Is it worthless? Is there any value in obeying the law if people are rewarded for breaking? I urge you to vote no on this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ludwig. And before we go on, let me just say that Representative Greenlick had to leave us to testify in another committee, and he'll be back as soon as he can. Go ahead.
Good morning. I'm Cynthia Kendall. I live at 2035 Hollywood Drive Northeast here in Salem, and I'm also in Senator Courtney's district. I'm here today to testify about House Bill 2787, and I'd just like to start by saying it really doesn't matter what side of the immigration issue you're on, and I know we have a real split idea about this issue. But in order for any law to be a good law, it has to be specific, has to be actionable, and deliver what it promises. This bill fails that test. Section 18D of the bill stipulates that to be eligible for the benefits of this bill, a person has to intend to become a citizen. This overlooks two key facts. First, the state of Oregon has no standing to determine this intent. Any attempt to do so just amounts to guesswork. Secondly, in order for illegal aliens to pursue citizenship, they must return to their country of origin and reside there while following the process legally. This would preclude any student from obeying the provisions of the bill. Even the DACA program does not convey citizenship. And a couple of these people testified about their very special circumstances, but I think for the most part this applies to them. The only way that this bill could become broadly applicable is with the passage of a mass amnesty at the federal level, as many pundits and politicians have suggested is inevitable. However, we must consider that several major amnesties have come before Congress in the past 20 years under presidents from both parties, and not a single one has become law. The current amnesty push that is being foisted on the American people is already beginning to come apart at the seams. Wouldn't it make more sense to wait until the federal immigration issue is resolved before pushing to pass a state law that could easily contradict federal law? Clearly, banking on a federal amnesty to make enforceable the provisions of this bill is reckless and very short-sighted. This bill is bad for several reasons. But one reason should concern advocates from both sides of this debate. The fact that House Bill 2787 still promises far more than it can actually deliver. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor. Okay, thank you, all three of you. And I'd like to call up PSU President Vin Vivo, University of Oregon President Michael Gottfriedson, and Jim Francisconi from the State Board of Higher Ed. Okay, Messrs. Vivell and Francisconi, welcome back to this committee.
Thanks.
President Gottfriedson, it's a pleasure to welcome you to Oregon and your first time to this committee.
Chair Dembro and Vice Chairs, members of this committee, multi-talented, using Senator Courtney's description. The President's asked that I go first here. This is a great, I'm speaking here on behalf of the State Board of Higher Education, and I have to say that it's been a privilege, one of my privileges in my public life, to be a member of the State Board of Higher Education for the last 6 years. This testimony, this appearing in front of you, is actually probably the highlight of my time on the State Board of Education for what you've witnessed here. To be able to be present with Senator, with Senate President Courtney, and to witness that, to witness these students, and to be here at, I think, an historic moment for Oregon is a personal privilege. Almost 2 years ago, in March of 2011, the State Board unanimously endorsed tuition equity. Since then, we have been formally aligned with the leadership of the Oregon Student Association that deserves special credit. Sometimes the students are ahead of us in terms of fairness and equity, as well as the more than 250 people that are here from across the state. They've been seeking this for a long time. We also commend the leadership of the presidents of all of the Oregon universities, all seven, not just the two that are in front of you, and Chancellor George Pernsteiner, whose support for tuition equity has been unequivocal. Passage of HB 2787 will send a clear message to all of our students, including our growing population of Latino students, that if you work hard, graduate from an Oregon high school, and seek a path to citizenship, we want you in our state. We want you to contribute to the economic base of our state, and we want you to pay taxes and support other Oregonians who have the same dreams and ambitions. If you do all these things, we will find a place for you in our colleges and universities, and we will not hold you responsible for the actions of others. We have no enrollment caps, as you've heard, in our university system. We have room for you. What's different now than 2 years ago when this committee met and the board endorsed it is President Obama's executive order, which will allow undocumented students who graduate from our universities to be eligible for two-year work permits that can be renewed. The students would benefit from this bill are Oregon high school graduates who have attended some or all of their K-12 education in Oregon. The state has already invested in their elementary and secondary education. Without the passage of this bill, Oregon will miss out on the talent and skills of those students who are a key part of our communities and our culture, and miss out on gaining a return on investment when these students earn a higher education and are taxpaying Oregonians. This is the important point in my testimony. We are not talking about giving anything away. We are talking about setting a reasonable level of cost sharing for our higher education system. The same level of cost sharing that we have for our resident students. Even at resident tuition rates, these students will still be paying a significant amount for their education, and almost twice what the state is paying for them. When Senator Courtney first introduced that resolution, it was reversed. The state was paying twice what the students will pay. Now it's the other way around. The unanimous endorsement of the State Board of Higher Education for tuition equity included support of business and community leaders, people such as Alan Ford, Roseburg Lumber Company, Matt Donegan, Forest Capital Partners, Jill Island, Intel, Kirk Schuler, St. Charles Health System. These and other business and community leaders understand that these Latino and other students will contribute to a strong workforce and economy, especially as Oregon becomes more dependent on the workforce skills and innovation of our Latino residents, citizens, and community members who are the fastest growing members of our Oregon communities. The unanimous board support also included academic leaders and faculty members and students who understand that we should recognize students who have succeeded, like the ones you heard today, often with distinction in their secondary education in Oregon, and encourage them to obtain a university degree. It is the right message to send to all of our children and our increasingly diverse communities. In our classrooms, in these halls, we teach equity, tolerance, opportunity for all people. Our policies should match these teachings. In conclusion, we'd like to thank legislative champions of tuition equity, Senate President Peter Courtney, former Senator Frank Morris, Representative Dimbro, You embody the best of political leadership. We look forward to the day when there will be one Oregon, neither divided by class nor race. One Oregon with a place in her heart for every child. In conclusion, on a personal note, I'm proud of my daughter, Micah, who was born in Bogota, Colombia. She is very talented. She contributes to the state. She is not more talented. She is not more committed. She did not have the psychological barriers that Representative Gallegos did, that these students that were here today and these other students. The only difference between my daughter and these students just to be who happened to be her mom and dad. That is not America.
Thank you, Jim.
Chair Dembro, for the record, my name is Wim Liebelt, president of Portland State University. I'm an immigrant. I came here 38 years ago, and I got a green card because I got married. I think it's worked out all right for me, the family, and I like to think for the country. So it's perhaps not surprising that I'm supportive of House Bill 2787. But beyond me, Portland State University has a proud history of supporting tuition equity for the children of undocumented immigrants. And I think tuition equity is economically beneficial, morally right, and frankly, politically smart. We know it's economically beneficial. We know with the demographic changes in this country, we cannot afford to waste the talents of anybody. Employers need to be able to find skilled workers from all races and ethnic groups. We can't afford to waste talent. In 2025, one in four students in the K-12 system in Oregon is expected to be Latino. Currently, that group has a low high school graduation rate. We think that part of that, not the only reason, but part of that is, and the students spoke to that so eloquently, is the lack of belief, the lack of faith in that there is a next step for them, that there is an opportunity. So we think that without the promise of college, this number of graduating Latino students won't get much better. And while obviously Latinos are not the only ones who are in this category of undocumented, they are, of course, a large part of it. So this issue alone challenges our collective efforts to meet the state's need for a more competitive workforce and the ultimate goal of our 40-40-20 plan. Tuition equity is also the morally right thing to do. We know that education is the pathway to success. I think all of us in the room know this. And we are effectively denying it by charging out-of-state tuition to students, even students who may have attended every single year of K-12 here in America. And doing the right thing, the morally right thing for these students, also creates a competitive advantage for Oregon. And of course, that gets to this question in part of, will it cost universities anything to educate these students? Does it cost nothing on the margin? We know, regardless of how you play those numbers precisely, getting these students a college degree will make them contributors to the state's economy. They will come back many, many fold, whatever it may have cost to educate them. It will come back many, many fold in terms of the taxes they pay, the welfare dependency avoided, all the other negative consequences that we know that are associated with not being educated. If we choose not to act, we stop these students' education short of Oregon's 40-40-20 finish line, and as I said, increase their likelihood of dependence on social services in the future. Finally, I think tuition equity is the politically smart thing to do. I think the representatives in Washington have begun to see that. And I know that we want these students on our campus, in our classes. The nation has finally come to see that for all of us to realize the promise of democracy, all of our residents need to be well-educated and have a path to citizenship. And I hope you will help make this possible. I will enter into the record both my testimony, also an article from the Oregonian, Steve Dunn's column, about Victor Mena, one of our students, who, again, through sort of a fluke, was able, even though he was undocumented, to finally get legal status and be able to attend. An example of a student with just absolutely amazing skills who's lost to the workforce would just be a loss to all of us. And the final item is a letter supporting tuition equity signed by all seven presidents of the Oregon University, all making these very same arguments. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. President. President Conferenson.
Thank you, Chair Dembrough and Vice Chair Huffman and committee members. My name is Michael Gottfriedson. I'm the president of the University of Oregon, and I'm delighted to be here with you this morning. A great pleasure to discuss tuition equity and to provide my strong support of HB 2787 and to underscore what my colleagues have said, that all seven Oregon University presidents do provide their support, and we will provide that in a letter to the committee later today. I joined the University of Oregon just 6 months ago after spending several decades as an administrator in public higher education, most recently 12 years in the University of California. I'd like to speak a little bit about that experience because, as has been mentioned, California passed an analogous piece of legislation about 12 years ago now, known there as AB 540, and I could speak to some of the consequences of that, all of which in my mind have been positive for the state and for the universities there. Before doing, I might mention that I find this idea a great idea, an idea that is squarely in the set of ideas that animate our public universities. And I note that we recently celebrated the birthday of Abraham Lincoln, and I find this idea similar to the idea that he had as president when he understood that individual economic and social mobility is tied to access to higher education, and that fact caused him to signed the Morrell Act, which created the land-grant universities in this country, arguably one of the greatest pieces of social legislation ever enacted, that provided access to residents of the country without regard to their status or station in life to higher education. And it is actually beyond measure the contributions that our great public universities have made, animated by that very idea. And I find this idea, which seeks to provide access to public higher education for our residents, to enable that access, very much in that tradition, consistent with that great idea that has provided such benefit to Oregon and to the country. I mentioned that I spent the last 12 years in the University of California. California did pass legislation a little over a decade ago, very analogous to the legislation in front of you that you're now contemplating. They're known as AB 540. I would say that in my experience and in the data and reports issued by the University of California, that experience has been very positive for the state, for the universities. Modest impact, really, in terms of the numbers of students, but for each of those students, enabled access to the higher education experience that has benefited them individually and the state collectively. The financial impact, also quite modest, as experienced by the University of California, and I think we can take that as evidence about what the likely impact would be financially for our universities. So I would say, on the basis of the very idea that you're contemplating and its consistency with the idea that has really underscored public higher education in our country and in this state, that it is a great collective benefit. It's in the public interest to enable access to higher education as much as we can. Mindful of the fact that our Oregon universities do not have enrollment caps for resident students, and we seek to enroll all eligible Oregonians at our universities. This will not affect that commitment, but will allow more residents to attend our higher education. So I applaud you for considering this measure and support it wholeheartedly. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Thank you, all three. Any questions? Yes, Rick Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, thank all three of you for being here today. And for each of the two college presidents here today, as we talk about enrollment and what you offer to in-state residents, it's my understanding that if an Oregon graduate at this point in time from high school who meets your academic requirements, any of them that apply are accepted. Is that correct?
Absolutely true, and we seek aggressively to enable their attendance, yes.
Okay. And for Mr. Francescone, I appreciate you being here, too. And by the way, for the record, Micah is one of our shining new employees in Hood River County School District. She's a wonderful addition to our staff at Hood River Middle School, so thank you for what you've done in her life. As you and your colleagues on the state board contemplated your position on this bill, you obviously are very concerned about the financial well-being of the OUS system in general, and it would have been and is and will be your position that this wouldn't provide for any financial harm to the system. Is that correct upon passage of this bill?
Right. That's our position. It's also the fiscal analyst for the state's position.
As a follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
The OUS system obviously compiles a lot of data regarding degree acquisition and numbers of students and programs offered and so forth and so on. Would it be reasonable to think that the OUS system could perhaps on an annual basis just provide data regarding the numbers of students who would take advantage of this privilege upon passage of this bill as well, just so the state as a whole could see the impact as over the course of, say, the next 4 or 5 years?
Yes.
Thank you.
It's a good idea.
Thank you. Thank you, all three. Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Huffman.
Thank you, sir. Just briefly, I met with President Bob Davies the other day from Eastern Oregon University, and he told me that he has 9 Hispanic students on a cash basis going to the school. Is there anything on the horizon that you project that would skew those numbers? This bill is not going to change anything that affects Eastern Oregon University. It will affect your universities, but 9 students, Bob said that it's not exactly overwhelming to his university. Do you see anything different for you guys?
I do not, and I think that the experience in California would support that as well.
I would agree. Because of what's been happening to resident tuition, as well as the flattening out of the number of high school graduates, enrollment the last 2 years and has not been growing as rapidly as it had been growing in the early part of the decade. So, you know, it's not like we're that worried about whether we get 10 or 20 or 30 more students. It is still, as noted before, in-state tuition is still a heck of a lot of money, and these students are not eligible for Pell Grants or Oregon Opportunity Grants or any other form of financing, and so for better or worse, for worse in my view, that is still going to keep down their ability to attend.
Follow up.
Yes.
Just briefly, I don't know if you want to, if you've given this thought. I've been approached by a lot of people that say this is not fair, and it was mentioned in earlier testimony, because we're not allowing a student from U.S. citizen from Utah to be able to come to Oregon to one of your universities and pay in-state tuition, and so it doesn't create equity, it creates unfairness. Comment about that?
Well, obviously this is applies to people who have been residents, albeit undocumented residents, of Oregon. So there's a notion that that's what it's limited to. So in that sense, it doesn't seem to me it creates a problem. But there's also a California court case, I think, related to this.
But in addition to what Emma said, I would note that each of those students has the opportunity to attend their own public universities in their state as a resident. So I believe that provides the equity and fairness that we would seek.
Thank you.
Thank you, all three.
I'd like to call up, it's time for the attorneys. Raquel Hecht, would you please come up? Stephen, are you on the phone?
Yes, I am.
Okay, thank you, Stephen. Raquel Hecht, is she around somewhere? Well, while we're waiting for her, Stephen, could you introduce yourself and give us some introductory remarks, please?
My name is Stephen Manning.
attorney here in Oregon. I have been practicing law, immigration law in particular, and human rights law, probably more than 15 years. We do substantial work on, we've been working with immigrant youth, especially during the, since the Deferred Action program was announced, working on organizing and ensuring that as many students as possible are able to access legal services or to obtain deferred action.
Okay. Thank you very much. Raquel, would you introduce yourself and let us know who's with you?
Yes, hello. My name is Raquel Hecht. I'm an immigration attorney in Eugene, Oregon. And with me today is Antonio Huerta, who is the outreach manager at the University of Oregon, and Joel Montemayor, who is the executive director of the HEP, the High School Equivalency Program at the University of Oregon.
Okay.
We work with many of the same people.
Mm-hmm.
So I was going to speak a little bit about those people. Maybe I'll get a chance, but I think the disadvantage of being one of those later speakers is that everything that I had to say has pretty much been said and quite a bit more eloquently than I might have been able to say. So I did want to touch a little bit on something a little different than my prepared statements. And sorry, Stephen, I didn't get a chance to hear what you were just saying about the DACA program. But I did some of the negative against testimony that was said. Talks about people being illegal, and I did want to mention that most of these people are now in legal status or will be in legal status. They're not going away. They're going to become citizens. There's no doubt in my mind about that. And I think that the debate in Congress right now is, you know, should we grant them citizenship first, or should they all be packaged in this other deal that we're putting together for everybody else? But I don't think there's any question that these people will become citizens of our country, and that taking the steps that you are considering taking is only good for us. And it's not just about them and creating opportunities for them. It's about us and how great it is, what we need to do to keep these people on the right track, being productive for our state and our country. I had a couple of examples, and I'll just tell you about one of them, who I named Juan, came at my office a few months ago. This was a kid who'd been brought here when he was 2 years old. He was not on the right track. He specifically told me I didn't finish high school because I knew there was no point. I just went out and got a job, and, you know, now I heard about this DACA program. I want to know more about it. And I could tell this kid was really bright, but he didn't have a great attitude, unlike these really bright, the Edith Gomez's that you've seen, that are going to do it no matter what. He was maybe even in the majority of the kids that we have. And so I gave him the speech. I said, you know, you're a bright kid. You need to get into the HEP program, and you need to get that high school equivalency, and you need to think about what you're going to be doing for college. And this kid was a kid who was hanging out at the Denny's, getting in trouble, hanging out with the wrong crowd. And he said, you know what? Now that I have this opportunity and I can see that there's a future for me, that is what I'm going to do. And that's what he's doing. He's changed his friends. He's getting his degree. He told me he wants to become a mechanic or even a mechanical engineer. And that's the type of person that we need to be encouraging, because it's going to make a difference for us. And they are bright kids. They're capable. We just need to show them. And I don't know if...
Well, before we do that, Representative Huffman has a question. And before you pose your question, I just want to make one clarifying statement. You know, I said that the requirements of the bill are that a student graduate from an Oregon high school. That was not exactly right. If you look closely at the bill, you'll see that this also applies to students who may have gone to an alternative high school or even, I think, a GED. The key is that they have been accepted by an Oregon university. So, and so the Oregon University considers them ready to be a student at their university. Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Stephen and Raquel, what I would like to hear from you is that portion of the bill that on the intent of becoming a citizen. I'm not an immigration attorney. I don't understand all the aspects of immigration law. I don't know if there's only one path to citizenship. Is there an alternative for a student? If you guys could talk a little bit about what that would look like for one of these students that enter one of our universities for in-state tuition, what then do they think? What's the process? What path do they get on?
Raquel and then Stephen.
Okay. Well, I think that, I mean, obviously, one would have to have a definition from the legislature or whoever on what that would entail, if that would mean a statement or whatever. But I do think that the DACA program in itself shows intent to become a citizen, because it's an affirmative action that you've taken to show that you want to have legal work permission and reside legally in this country. It does not provide a path specifically to citizenship at this time, but we expect that it will.
Stephen, would you respond?
So the term pathway to citizenship, it's a great conversational starter, but in terms of what the law talks about, it's not a legal construct. So when someone talks about these students, the very first step for each one of these students is going to be obtaining some sort of regularized status, and then it would become permanent residence. And once they're a permanent resident, then they're on the same footing as every other individual who's immigrated to the United States who is on that pathway to citizenship. So someone who's affirming now that they intend to become a citizen is essentially affirming that they will become or want to comply and become members of our community. And as soon as that ability is open to them, then they would do so. There's many different ways. There's probably about six, almost seven different sort of paths, so to speak, that would get someone to permanent residence. And once someone's at that permanent residence stage, there's one path to citizenship for each of those citizens. For each of those permanent residents. So there's many ways to get there to that permanent residence platform, and then one from there to citizenship.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Huffman.
Stephen and Raquel, can you give me an idea of the general length of time that complete process might take? Is it 4 years? Is it 10 longer?
It does depend on. Stephen, do you mind if you want to go first? Or? Well, I'll just say.
There's two steps. So one is becoming a permanent resident. And so right now, under existing law, it varies a great deal. So it can take a very short time. It can take as little as 3 months. It can take as long as many, many years. Once someone's at that permanent resident stage, it's fairly standardized to get to citizenship, and right now that's essentially it's a five-year period. So it's 5 years of permanent residence, and then you can file for citizenship. There are some variations, but that's sort of the general rule.
Great. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Representative Gorsuch, and before you begin, let me just put the next panel on notice that you're up next, and that's Nan Noteboom, Dina Helms, Karen Ramirez, and Reverend Kurt Nielsen. Yeah, go ahead, Representative Gorsuch.
So for both of you, whoever wants to answer this, if there is an answer, I'm coming at this from a past law enforcement background, and can you tell me if you know of any laws currently on the books that punish people for the actions of someone else? Because I can't think of any.
No, I can't think of any, Stephen.
No, not that I'm aware of, and if I could do just a short tangent on that answer, is within immigration law itself, there's developing a body of law for individuals who are not, when they're young or, when they're children, who are not culpable of, being present in the United States, if that's culpability, that they're here, it wasn't, their parents made decisions for them to, for their future, et cetera. And that, so there is developing a body of law that would not to sort of protect that innocence.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any further questions, committee? Representative Wisman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Stephen, that's his own.
Yes.
Since we have free legal advice today. Stephen, would you please comment on how you think House Bill 2787 will interface, or any problems in interfacing it with new federal immigration law being discussed by the White House and Congress?
Right now, the proposals that are sort of floating out there, I've seen some drafts, but again, you know, as you well know, what ends up actually being passed could be something very different. My instinct, based on prior changes in immigration law, is the federal rules this bill right now would not conflict with any federal rules, especially if there's provisions in there that would allow for rulemaking, so that if there needs to be some modifications in definitions or terms, then that could be brought back into sync if there's some shift in the law that's totally unanticipated.
Mm-hmm. Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, if I could just jump in for a sec, it's my understanding that under the federal legislation that applies to young people like this has traditionally been called the DREAM Act. And even under the DREAM Act cannot mandate to the states that they must have in-state tuition, that they must have tuition equity. That remains a state-by-state decision. Obviously, if we take this position now and the DREAM Act passes, then, you know, conforming to that via rule will be very easy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. But I also think, Stephen, again, for legal advice, please, that I think President Obama's proposal he's talked about is that the people applying would have to leave the United States for a period of time, and how would that, you know, some of the limitations or the restrictions we put in this 2787 bill.
Mm-hmm. So the question is, would these young people have to leave the country for an extended period of time?
Okay.
My understanding of the proposal is actually no. There are four different sections of what's being floated, the comprehensive immigration reform, and one of those components is it's the DREAM Act essentially, but with some modifications, and that would not require a departure. And even under the other elements of there's a program that would augment the number of visas presently available under the family-based system. Under that system, not all individuals need to travel. There's been recent changes through the processing of these cases, like administrative processing, so that most individuals who would eventually be required to travel can estimate being outside the United States for somewhere around 2 weeks. So, that's a vacation period. So having to leave the country and re-enter is not... It's a processing mechanism. It's not. That's what it is.
Thank you. Stephen, thank you for giving us your time via telephone. I'm glad this worked out. Raquel, thank you for coming forward. Gentlemen,
thank you.
I'm very pleased that you came to show your support. We're going to have to move on, though, to the next panel.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yes. So if we could have Nan Noteboom, Dina Hellams, Karen Ramirez, and I guess we actually don't have room for Reverend Nielsen just yet, so you could hold on. And then I want to look up the panel. Okay.
Chair?
Yes, Representative Johnson.
For the record, I'd just like to make the statement. Ms. Noteboom is also a member of our Hood River County School District teachers group, so she's here today. She's done a great job as a wonderful teacher in our high school.
Thank you. Thank you, ma'am. Reverend Nielsen, I guess we have a fourth chair, so you can come up too. And we're still waiting for Dina Hellams and Karen Ramirez. But why don't we start with you, Nan?
Okay.
Oh, here they are. Great.
Chair Dembrow and members of the committee, good morning. My name is Nan Noteboom, and I teach English at Hood River Valley High School. I am also an adjunct instructor for Columbia Gorge Community College. At HRVHS, I teach Writing 121 and 122, College Freshman Composition, Part of my curriculum includes a college prep unit in which I help students apply to college and find ways to pay for college. Throughout the school year, I spend a great deal of time helping all my students get to college. In this process, I have met a number of undocumented students over the years. While immigration policy has never been a special interest of mine, these students are. They are some of my most motivated workers, most articulate writers, and best thinkers. One example is a student that I'll call Miguel, since I can't safely use his real name. Miguel passed the test to get into my class and dreamed of attending college in Oregon, any college. He was a great kid, bright, motivated, respected by the staff, captain of our soccer team, even voted Español Orgullo by the senior class, an example of Hispanic community pride. But Miguel was undocumented. He had few options other than to work illegally, and that's exactly what he is doing now. When I sit down with these students to discuss their college plans, I witness firsthand what it looks like to live without hope. The tuition equity bill would give them hope and the motivation to strive to better themselves. In 1982, the Supreme Court ruled that all students, legal or not, should have access to education. In that decision, Justice Brennan wrote that not educating them imposes a lifetime hardship on a discrete class of children not accountable for their disabling status. This same reasoning applies to Oregon's bright, motivated high school students who dream of walking across the Willamette campus, or of being a duck, or simply earning credits from CGCC after they finish the fall harvest. But international tuition is prohibitively expensive for them. The tuition equity bill will give them a chance at one of the most basic rights, the right to an education. Moreover, these students are an excellent investment for our state, one that we should not waste. Most of these kids work hard to succeed in school. To be frank, they often value education more than some of their legal counterparts. That's why I am compelled to speak for them, because they have repeatedly shown me that they have that spark and appreciation for learning. International tuition is typically 2 to 3 times as much as in-state tuition, and let's face it, if they can't get in-state tuition, they are not going to go. We see this happen every year with our own students at HRVHS. 3 years ago, I had an undocumented student, Maria, in my college writing class. Maria worked hard and passed both semesters with a B+. I saw her last summer when some friends invited us over to tour their packing house. She was on the line, sorting cherries beside her mother. She was clearly ashamed to see me. Marie's intellect and work ethic are going to waste because of the laws that deny her the same opportunity as her peers. Maria graduated, but so many undocumented students do not even get that far because they drop out earlier and at much higher rates than other students. Why should any undocumented student finish high school when she knows that college will not be an option for her? When she knows that there's a spot on the cherry packing line waiting for her? She could start earning money now, or she can finish high school. Where is her motivation to finish school? Miguel and Maria have both lived in Oregon since childhood. The tuition equity bill tells them and others like them that they work hard. The state of Oregon believes they can rise above their circumstances. Sure, they have to prove themselves, but the kids we're talking about are 100% capable of doing that. They just need you to give them the chance. I urge you to vote in favor of House Bill 2787 and create tuition equity for this group of deserving young Oregonians. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Notabone. Karen, would you like to go next?
Yes. Okay. Good morning, Chair Dembrow, Vice Chairs Harker and Huffman. For the record, my name is Karen Ramirez. I'm a 9th grader at Reynolds High School, and I live in Representative Gorsuch's district. Being a freshman, most people don't expect me to think about college, to understand its significance.
or how it will deeply impact my life. But I have thought and talked about college since I was six. I was just a little girl that didn't want to follow in her mom's footsteps of having multiple jobs because she didn't get the right education and was an immigrant. I wanted and still want something bigger, a future, a career. I'm on the right track with good grades, advanced courses, and determination. Unfortunately, because of my background that I didn't choose, I'm being forced to pay extra money that I don't have when all I want to do is pursue my life goal. When people ask me what I want to do after high school, I don't respond with, I want to go to college. I respond with, I will go to college. As I sit here today, I'm missing school because I know that these few hours that I sit here and talk to you guys, it will pay off tomorrow when you pass this bill and make life easier for me. I'm not just here talking for myself. I'm here talking for any immigrant that has the same struggle as I do, paying an out-of-state tuition, when they have lived in the state for as long as they can remember. I'm a first-generation student. I will be the first one to graduate from high school. I will be the first one to go to college. I will be the first one with a degree. I am a role model for the younger kids in my family. I will make the right decisions in life, just as I hope you will as well. There's also a letter from the Reynolds School District, from the parents from the Reynolds School District, and I would more than appreciate it if you read it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Karen.
Hi, thank you. And before I begin my testimony, I'd just like to say how proud I am to sit next to a former student of mine here in Karen and hear her powerful words. And also wanted to acknowledge, because you guys may not be aware, but there are four overflow areas that are packed and well over 200 people that have made it down. So clearly an important issue. So again, thank you to the chair, members of the committee. My name is Dina Helms. I'm a parent of three children in the North Clackamas School District, a veteran public school teacher, a Stanford Children Leader, an OEA member, and a voter. Thank you for your time today. Providing a pathway for Oregon's undocumented students to attend our public universities is a smart way to capitalize on the investment we've already made on them in the K-12 system. It acknowledges the work, achievement, and dreams of each of these young people. It's just plain common sense and the right thing to do in this case. As a middle school teacher in a high poverty setting that includes students without papers, I urge my students to dream big and find their North Star. I show them the evidence that being well educated is their ticket to a productive life. I share with them that I too came from a family of modest means and became the first in my family to graduate from college. But for some of our high-achieving, hard-working, undocumented students, students like Karen, the financial hurdle of paying out-of-state tuition rates to attend college is simply too high in a state that they have called home for a long time. In doing so, we're stunting their potential, weakening communities, and shortchanging the growth and economic development of Oregon. Tuition equity, as you've heard before, is now the law of the land in many states. It's proving to be an effective dial mover. According to a 2008 study published by Journal of Policy Analysis and Management, tuition equity policies were proven to increase college attendance, college completion, and high school graduation rates. Increasing the outcomes of each of these three areas is critical to the civic and economic well-being of our neighborhoods, our communities, and our state. If Oregon is serious about reaching the 40-40-20 goals that we set in the last go-around, we must pass tuition equity this year. We can't afford another year of limiting the dreams of students like Karen who are in our schools now, and Oregon can ill afford to squander the positive and productive impact these students will have around our state. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Dean. Reverend Nielsen.
Yes, sir. Good morning. Chair Dunbrow and Vice Chairs Harker and Huffman and representatives. My name is Kurt Nielsen. I am an Episcopal priest and rector or pastor of Saints Peter and Paul Parish on Portland's east side. The Spanish-speaking portion of our congregation includes families of widely varying immigration status. An essential part of our work involves us with high school-age young women preparing for their quinceañeras, a popular celebration of coming of age. We meet with the young women to prepare during pláticas, or conversations, helping all of us involved to make this moment one of meaning and of maturation. So I drove down on Ash Wednesday to tell you all how astounding these young women are. Some are standouts at their high schools, 4.0 students involved in community service and student government and sports. And some are average kids. They're decent enough grades with parents who care enough to guide them and involve themselves in their kids' lives. Most are somewhere in between. Hardworking students who keep themselves on the straight road amidst many temptations, with parents who work nights and who work several jobs, and who consider themselves lucky to have the kind of back-straining, foot-aching work that you and I may have done when we were just getting started, but probably do no more. And all these young women hope and pray for is a chance to continue to study, to grow, so that they too can work hard and care for their aging parents and encourage their brothers and sisters and have a career where they can serve. It's an old story, really. Is it sentimental today to call it the American dream? The vision that hard work and basic values shape the lives of each new group of people in this nation of immigrants? In the end, these are Americans. Over and over, immigrants have prayed for and waited for and struggled for their chance to simply participate. Mine did, and the Irish of the turn of the century in New York bore the marks of this struggle. Your ancestors did too, unless your blood is truly Native American. Tuition equity is no handout. These young women and young men too, they only want to be as in debt to Sallie Mae and Wells Fargo as my kids are. They expect nothing free. If for no other reason, I say let's do this out of enlightened self-interest. The young women with whom I have worked are rich in gifts and ambition and a desire to serve. Today, many of their parents, at our parish at least, are laborers. In the blink of an eye, they will be the obstetrician delivering our grandchildren's babies. They will be the elementary school teacher helping that child learn to read. They will be the lawyer assisting in the execution of our estates. They'll be the clergy administering Saints Peter and Paul when good old Father Kurt is just a couple of stories that the old-timers tell. They will be seated here, listening to testimony from others who also seek equity. Already they are all that and more in many places. They are strong, and they are here, and they are a gift. If we help them now, we can say that we've truly helped ourselves. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Reverend.
Thank you all for coming before us today. We have one more panel of invited testimony, and I know they'll be brief, and that is Joel Fisher from OVA and Betsy Earls from ALI. And then I hope we'll be able to squeeze in one more panel of people who've signed up in opposition to the bill. So, colleagues, as long as you can stay around, I know many of you have to leave, but that's what we're looking at. Joel, you want to begin?
Sure. Chair Dembro, members of the committee, my name is Joel Fisher, senior policy analyst with the Oregon Business Association. I'm pleased to be here today. I want to start off by saying I have the utmost respect for the jobs that you guys have and the decisions that you have to make. It takes a very special kind of thoughtful and caring person who signs up for a job where you need to carefully weigh and consider what your constituents want and how they want you to vote, and also how you can properly lead. 7 years ago, I was on the Oregon Student Association board, and it came the time for us to decide what our key issues were going to be. And I fought tirelessly and pulled about an hour's worth of parliamentary procedural tricks to try and make tuition equity one of their top three issues. And in the end, I went back to my campus, defeated. Tuition equity didn't make it into their top three. Later, they added it as a fourth issue. I believe it's serendipitous that I'm here today, 7 years later, representing the Oregon Business Association, testifying in support of tuition equity. The Oregon Business Association consists of over 300 businesses in Oregon, from Nike on to New Seasons. We have a committee process, much like the legislature's, that is thoughtful and deliberative. And the Oregon Business Association has supported this legislation for a number of years. So we're here to testify in support of tuition equity. We see it as one part of the many policies that will help us get towards our goal of 40-40-20. And we urge your support.
Thank you, Joel. Betsy.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Betsy Earls, representing Associated Oregon Industries.
AOI has about 1,900 members across the state, both small and large businesses. I would say primarily small. Our membership makeup mirrors the general business size makeup of the state, so we have about the same percentage of small businesses within our membership as the state has overall. And AOI and its members support tuition equity and House Bill 2787, which extends in-state tuition rates to all qualified graduates of Oregon high schools, regardless of their immigration status. I think most of the things that I had planned to say to you today have already been covered, and you can read those in my testimony. But I would point out to you that this legislation is really important to the success of Oregon business and the economy. Oregon has fallen below the national average in educational attainment for our younger workforce, ages from 25 to about 44 years old. But the number of jobs that are requiring highly skilled workers among our membership and across the state continues to grow. Oregon has a high number of high jobs requiring high skill workers, and we are not producing enough from our own universities to fill that need. Oregon employers have been importing talent from other states for a number of years, and we can continue to do that, but not only would we prefer to be growing our own, I believe, and I understand from my members, that if current trends continue of these types of jobs growing, we won't be able to fill our need for those workers just through increased migration of college-educated workers from other states. Tuition equity may end up impacting only a small number of students, but those that it impacts will most likely remain in Oregon, will be highly employable in our business community, and we urge your support for those reasons. Many people, I think, see tuition equity as an immigration issue one way or another, and I hear that, but I would tell you also from our members' standpoint, this is absolutely an economic issue, and we support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Betsy. Thank you both of you for coming. Okay. So I'd like to call up Don Nash, Art Cruno, and Richard LaMontagne. And while they're coming up, let me say that, colleagues, we've received voluminous written testimony from many people on both sides of the issue, and I hope you'll have a chance to look at it before our work session on Friday. Okay, Mr. Nash.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Can you hear me okay? Thank you for the opportunity of testifying this morning. I feel that House Bill 2787 should be defeated. As you know, this would allow students who are not citizens of Oregon to pay in-state tuition to attend an Oregon college.
Mr. Nash, can I just stop you there? We need you to identify yourself.
I'm sorry.
No, it's fine.
I'm Don Nash. I live in Lake Oswego, Oregon.
Thank you.
The question is, why are we even considering this? Well, some would say it's the politically correct thing to do. But I would contend that being politically correct in this situation is morally wrong. This bill is contrary to what our country stands for, the country that is based upon laws passed for the common good and the obeying of those laws. We hear that these students would not be able to attend college at Oregon State or the University of Oregon if in-state tuition is not granted. I don't believe that's true. There are numerous financial packages that are available. There are less costly colleges that are available. And remember, paying for college is not simply a matter of that illegal aliens are confronted with. It's a problem for all college students. One of the arguments that is made is that these people should not be penalized for the mistakes of their parents. Well, I contend that there are a lot of young people in today's world that have survived the mistakes of their parents and have become good citizens of our country. They're learning the value of what it means to be a citizen of the United States, and that is probably the reason that these families came here in the beginning. So what we're really doing is we're supporting the struggle that the parents went through in order to come here. Colleges are suffering economically, as are many segments of our economy. I would imagine that college admission officials have a formula of how many in-state students they can take versus how many out-of-state students they can take in order to generate the revenue for the college to operate profitably. So if we're going to grant more in-state slots and possibly deprive in-state students who have good academic records of those slots, then I think it's doing a disservice to those that are citizens. The question is, what are we accomplishing with this bill? Well, in my opinion, we are not accomplishing anything. In some cases, we might be reducing the number of slots available to resident students. We're depriving colleges of some much-needed revenue. And I think we're cheapening the value of being a citizen of the United States. I think the 2787 is flawed and without merit. It is a bad idea, and I think it should be defeated. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Nash. Mr. Crino, could you introduce yourself?
Yes, Chairman Demerol, Vice Chair, members of the committee. I appreciate this opportunity. I'm Art Crino from Tigard. I can appreciate a university degree. I'm electrical engineering graduate from Oregon State and have had a very good career. However, after retirement, I've become concerned with the graduation rate from our high schools. It's 68% at this time. The 32%, what happens to them? The statistics are not very quantified, but the ones that are available are enough to make a grown man cry. Now, fortunately, Governor Kitzhaber has addressed this. He's appointed a chief education officer, Rudy Crew, and as of earlier this week, the Oregonian announces that they have come up with a plan to start correcting this terrible situation, but they don't have the money to do it. So it's insinuated here that it doesn't cost any more than the in-state tuition for additional students. So then I ask, why do you charge several times for an out-of-state tuition? I worked with numbers all my life, and those things kind of bother me. My conclusion is that this is not social justice, and I would vote against this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Crino. Mr. LaMontagne, welcome back.
Thank you, sir.
Good to see you again.
Hello, Mr. Dembo and committee members. Thank you very much for the chance to testify today. My name is Richard LaMontagne. I live in Washington County. I'm asking you to oppose this bill. Granting in-state tuition to young people here illegally would give them chances not equal, but in many cases superior, to those of American citizens seeking the same educational and professional opportunities. In this debate, very few have raised the issue of affirmative action. Most of the illegal immigrants this bill favors would qualify as federal protected minorities, and thereby for affirmative action preferences over those who do not qualify as such, including the majority of American citizens. These preferences would enable illegal immigrants who are helped into Oregon universities by in-state tuition to compete with, and in many cases to beat out American citizens for positions in academic and professional programs over the course of their entire lives. Affirmative action originally was intended to assure that black American citizens, after decades of suppression, would have access to educational and occupational opportunities. I believe it would pervert that intent to give foreign citizens here illegally the in-state tuition that would enable the vast majority of them to access, in turn, the affirmative action preferences that would give them a competitive advantage over American citizens long into the future. Please remember, whatever the circumstances of an illegal immigrant's arrival in our country, our nation's foremost responsibility is to its own people, its own citizens. House Bill 2787 would violate that responsibility. Thanks again for the chance to testify.
Thank you very much. Okay, so we have several more people who have signed up to speak against the bill. Colleagues, do you have patience for a little more, or you have to go?
We have meetings.
Okay, yes, well, I think both caucuses have meetings. So those of you who came and signed up, I'm sorry there are a few of you who won't get to testify, but we would love to have your written testimony, and please get it to us. We will be considering this bill on Friday, and yes, Representative Johnson and Representative Gallegos.
Mr. Chair, will the committee have an opportunity to introduce amendments to the bill intended to improve it?
Yes. As I said at the beginning of this session, if we can get them very soon, so we have time to look at them and do fiscals, yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Gallegos.
Quiero decir gracias a todos los jóvenes.
Can I have your... Some quiet, please. Thanks.
Quiero decir gracias a todos los jóvenes y los estudiantes. Es un día muy importante hoy, y su voz es muy importante hoy y en la futura. Gracias. What I said was thank you to the students and the young people who came and testified today. Their voice is very important today and will be in the future. Thank you.
Thank you. Colleagues, thank you for your attention, your patience. Everyone, thank you for coming out today. We are adjourned.